Hey guys, it's Chris Denson from Innovation Crush, and guess what? I just got my first away luggage. I gotta tell you, this thing is amazing. First of all, you've got three sizes to choose from. The carry-on, the medium, the large, depending on what kind of travel you are. I travel light, so I got the little one, but it is amazing. You get a 100-day trial. You can live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it, do whatever you want. And if you don't like it, they will refund your money. There's free shipping on any away order within the continental U.S., size that's compliant with all major airlines while maximizing the amount you can pack. I got to tell you, if you want to travel smarter, you need an away suitcase. I highly suggest you guys visit awaytravel.com/crush for $20 off your order. Again, that's awaytravel.com/crush. You should be able to spell those three words, shouldn't you? And just enter the promo code at checkout. That's awaytravel.com/crush.
Not a pitch session, but definitely, like, by all means, you know, you guys have probably already embraced the spirit of Worlds and kind of get, like, it's a hugely inspiring opportunity to have access to information to people and things like that. So,
but if you have a white space and a clear path to profitability and a clear sell story, and someone would probably want to buy it, I would probably want to hear it.
Or that. I guess, look, for starters, I mean, you know, I was thinking about the concept of worlds, you know, worlds colliding, and, you know, sometimes we come together and we don't always understand what each other does. If you were in a world where nobody knew who Rob Heerdick was, how would you explain the Rob Heerdick phenomenon? Like, how would you go, like, I am,
at its core, a creator that just has the outlier experience of sort of living in the world of professional athlete and entertainment and building brands and kind of seeing the intersection of all of them, which led to creating multiple businesses and a professional career and television career and creating both media and brands. A little technical.
No, it's fine. I think one of the things that kind of impresses me, and probably everybody here, is this idea that you've been able to become this sort of multi-dimensional individual. You don't see that. I mean, you may see people with the same level of success in a craft, like skating. What do you feel like was the differentiator for you to kind of be able to become this entrepreneur that you've become versus other people who've kind of had the same level of success but not the same path?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's, when I was younger, I think I would let my dreams evolve around opportunities, right? So things would present themselves, and then I would dive in, immerse myself in, and create them, play a part in creating them, whether that's a company or becoming a professional skateboarder or creating a television show, you know, whatever it was, like as opportunities presented themselves, I would learn the craft and then create that and allow me to build that as another skill set that I could then scale outside of what that opportunity created.
That's great. And, you know, when was that instilled in you? Like, I read that when you were 12, you had an endorsement deal, you know, by 15, 16, you had moved out of, you know, from Ohio. But where did that sort of, like, adventurous spirit come from?
Look, I don't really know, but I know I was born with it. You know, I mean, it's the reality of that. My idea of having a strategic mind was at a very young age. You know, even when I was 11 years old and I wanted to go to the skateboard competition that they had and I didn't have any money, I called the skate shop and said, hey, if I get 10 people to pay to come to the contest, can I get it for free? And they were like, okay, right? So I don't know why I would do that. You know, I went on the Yellow Pages, found a number, just called and just cold called. And it is with that that I began to build this foundation of seeing what you want and creating a plan to go get it. And then it just evolved as time changed. But I was raised by entrepreneur wolves. You know, it wasn't like that the kid that owned the skate shop was 19 years old. He said, come down and skate. Like, and then I was so good initially right there. They're like, oh, you should ride for our team. If you know, you're this good, you've only been skating a month. And then he started the distribution. And the guys that I met through the shop all started companies. And I just thought that's what my path was. This is what you do. You just start companies. that's why I started my first company when I was so young, because I just thought that was part of what I was supposed to do.
It's also interesting because yesterday Roman opened the event with this concept, or among other concepts, it's called OFF. It was an acronym for Obsession, Hours, and Focus. Right, and I think at 11, right, you had to have some obsession with skate. You know, like, what was it that drew you to it? What was the thing that made it kind of feel like your own, that you wanted to really be passionate about, to go out and ask for money to get this competition?
Look, like, I think that what drew it to me was the individuality and the sort of addiction to progression. Right? It's the beauty of what it is in the sport, is that it's you make it your own, and then it's limitless by design. And always evolving. So you become addicted to going through the process of trying to learn a new trick, and then when you finally do it, it's like this euphoria that you become addicted to, right? And I was, you know, in the eighth grade, I was on the varsity soccer team. I was playing four seasons of soccer a year. It was like, this is his path. He's going to be a pro soccer player. He's going to go to college and get a scholarship. You know, I was in Taekwondo, like, on my way to get my black belt. It was a Kia! You know, but I had already, and what I always tell people, especially when you're young, you know, I had a father that sort of instilled in me that you can do anything, like anything I asked him. He said, of course I can do that. I can do that. I'm your dad, right? So I just kind of, of course I can do anything. And then I built a foundation of becoming successful at every single thing that I did. So if I look back, it's why that confidence to attack anything, even that you don't know, because you have this embedded subconscious belief that you could literally do anything.
Well, here's the other thing. I mean, skating, especially compared to entrepreneurship, I think skating is one of those things where there's a super high fail rate, right? And it's also high risk. Right, depending on like how big, like, I mean, especially with you even outside of skating having over 20, you know, world records, or haven't set that many. What kind of parallels do you draw between those two worlds, like that, you know, trial and error of, you know,
in your craft as well as entrepreneurship?
Well, look, I like any great business, if you start with the end in mind, right? I think what a lot of people do is they just start with an idea and it'll work itself out, right? And in skateboarding, you can't do that. Like, you have to know, this is the trick that I want to do. You know what it looks like at the final product. Now you've got to go through the process to eventually learn it and all the trial and error to get there. And I think fundamentally, when it comes to being an entrepreneur, if you can't decide what the end is before you start and why you're doing it in the first place, and then build a path backwards from that, it's going to be so much harder for you to maintain the energy and the faith when things go south, right? And or make the right adjustments to where you're proactively pivoting rather than reactively pivoting. You know, I think especially people from my world, I mean, look, I quit high school and started companies based off of passion and idea and drive, and didn't understand the first thing about business, you know, despite the fact of when I became a professional skateboarder, I kept calling myself a business, and I would track all my finances, like, right. You know, in 1991, you know, I sold one board and got a $2 check and had to mark that, you know what I mean? I had to go cash that so that I could get some Dr. Peppers, you know. But it's, you know, it is that sort of mentality from skateboarding. And the beauty of skateboarding, what it embedded in me, it is the only sport in the world that is driven by progression, right? And because of the nature of the board and what you skate on, it's limitless by design. So, you know, even as with my league, it is still every year these guys are doing harder and harder stuff. It's almost like the beauty of the slam dunk without the limitations of the physical body that a slam dunk has, right? And our dunks, our tricks, if you will, get harder and harder and more insane and more insane. And that that sort of core mentality where it's progression over everything, and the NBDs, as we like to call it, the never been dones, mm-hmm. matter the most when you're the first person to create something, either on a spot or invent a trick. And that sort of same mentality of like where my lens for business is people call it white space or a disruption, you know what I mean? Like where it's just the skater's mind of an NBD.
Right.
Know?
What have you learned about human potential, right? Because I think when you see one trick done, you're like, oh my gosh, it's never been done before. And then a year later, somebody else like triples that feat.
Look, I think, forget about the fact that I've watched it happen in skateboarding. But think of the times we live in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the level of evolution and what we're going through just in the last 10 years is just incredible, you know? And I think if you apply that to all aspects of life, we just live in incredible times of you know, where we thought it was insane when we didn't have to have a CD player. And we had a 5 gig iPod where we were able to get like 10 CDs on it. We were like, what? Now, like, we're connected to the entire world through our phone, you know? And look, skateboarding's no different. What these kids do today, first try with their eyes closed. I couldn't even, if I dedicated my entire life, 10 years of mastery to one of these tricks, I could never do it. That's how difficult they've evolved, you know?
Speaking of mastery, you just segued into my next, did you guys watch his mastery video, the 60 second? Raise your hands.
No.
Three people. You guys get a prize.
Somebody play it.
By the way, I'm the rock, paper, scissors champion. Runner-up. Sorry. Okay. It's a long story. You talked about this concept of mastery, and, you know, the video is pretty interesting because there was all these visuals floating around about the things that you've worked on in your career and in your life, and you kind of touched on this concept of, like, I want to master mastery in a sense. Right? If you can just dive a little bit into that and, like, kind of explain it a little bit.
Well, look, you know, I think that, are we jamming over here? What are we jamming?
It's a concert next door.
Is it?
No, I don't know. I have no idea.
Is it? It doesn't sound like it's like coming from the fucking...
It'd be weird if you were the only one that heard it, and then...
Yeah.
I was like, what is that noise?
But it'd be better if I laid down and it made me go into yoga poses. Look, to me, you know, and I learned this from a Tony Robbins, right? Where even they talk about if you can develop your mastery at an early age, then your path in life is so much different, right? Especially if your mastery is scalable. What happens to someone that dedicates their life to an athletic mastery? It's not scalable, right? And ultimately, you're physically going to hit a wall. And you see these incredible athletes that then have a really hard time figuring out what to do next because their level of greatness, ultimately their personal mastery inspired masses, and that's ultimately what greatness is, right?
Right.
And you know, so for me, because I ended up doing so many things, and at the core of them is you just love to create and build stuff, right? So then there's part of that you like and do not like, you know, and really looking within yourself. Do you like being on TV? Do you like being like the chairman of your league? Do you like creating television shows? Do you like building brands? Like, do you like sitting in meetings? Do you like sitting on the board? Like, what do you actually like? And how does it actually all connect, you know? Because again, like I said in the video, for someone like me, you're so driven, and when you decide to do it, you execute. And what happens is, by doing so many different things, you end up standing for so many different things. And ultimately, if you have the ability to do anything and you choose to do everything, you end up standing for nothing, right? And that's sort of what I had to kind of reflect on, is what do you want to master, and how is it scalable for the rest of your life, and how is that going to ultimately define your legacy? What do you want that to look like? And for me, that ended up being taking sort of your entire holistic knowledge of owned, earned, and paid media and brand building and intersecting all of them into a philosophy to curate business ideas, build and accelerate them, and sell them, right? Like, that's what I want my mastery to be. So now that gives me the way I built my Deer Deck Machine company is now it's literally about systematizing that, and my goal is to build and sell 50 to 100 companies over the next 20 years, right? So then any media that I create, like, instead of creating a viral video show because I saw a business opportunity, mm-hmm. and saw the global syndication of Vinny DeBona and America's Funniest Home Videos, and I went out and made a cool version of it, but as a brand, it pulled me away from where I was headed before.
Right.
So now I'm doing a business show that is about curating curating, building, and selling businesses, right? So now it ties back to my mastery. And then ultimately, from a philanthropic standpoint, instead of doing building skate parks, I ultimately want to tie back to this incredible legacy that I have that no one can take away from me, is the fact that I've been attacked by sharks and tigers and been towed into giant waves and jockey horses, and I broke world records jumping cars backwards and flipped cars for Super Bowl commercials. Like, I have a highlight reel.
What else have you done?
It's a highlight reel that these life moments that I can, no matter what I go to achieve, you can't ever take away from me, right? So, and that's like a huge special part of my legacy. So my philanthropy will be creating a foundation for people that have these incredible moments where they've planned out everything, right? You're 80 years old and you want to, you know, put a motor on a paddleboard and drive it around Catalina, and you just know that it costs you $3,000 for the motor and $500 for the board, and you need a boat crew and it's $15,000, but you planned your entire dream out. I'm going to give you the money to go achieve it, right? And that's, I want at the end of my life to have, you know, 100 plus companies that I had built and sold that are now lasting forever, right? Like, I even fundamentally, I the purpose of my system is to build brands to last forever. And then you got 100 companies you built and sold, and you made 5,000 amazing moments or dreams come through for people. I can go and achieve that over time. Yep. With purpose. And now everything that I do will connect back to that core purpose, rather than doing all these different things that don't connect back to your mastery.
Is there any kind of shift in, you know, how people should perceive you? I mean, you spent a lot of your career known for a certain set of things.
Yeah.
And now, like, that conversation sounds very different than the Rob Dyrdek like we all sort of publicly know.
Yeah.
How do you handle that shift, or is it just kind of like you walk in the room like, yeah, I jumped, you know? Like, what's the process behind, like, putting that message out there in a way that's effective?
Look, I think you know, I'm not real big on trying to PR myself into a new image. I'm real big on showing it. You know, it's just the reality that I have, just when you thought I was just going to be a pro skateboarder, I launched a television career. You know what I mean? Just when you thought I would scale off from the television career, I launched a professional skateboarding league. You know, just when you thought that was it, then I built a complete entrepreneur show, Fantasy Factory, right? And then when you, okay, well, what's your next television show? Well, look, I know how hard it is to film those two. I'm going to create a stage show that I can shoot 30 episodes in 10 days instead of a show that I shoot 10 episodes over 6 months, you know, and a much more efficient business model behind it, right? Where I now have used my leverage with the networks to have a significant partnership rather than just be talent. Now, that's what you see today, right?
Right.
And this, all that pushed together. And to me, you just would have never expected that during Robin Big, you know, and the same way that, you know, I was afforded the opportunity to spend 2 years to really build out what I want to do for the rest of my life. And part of that is building an incredibly sophisticated television show around creating a fund and using the television platform as the thesis for the fund,
right?
And it's just when that goes and becomes a success, that'll be what I'm known more for more than anything, and that transition will kind of evolve from that point on.
That's amazing.
It's a slow process, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean? I'm not Madonna. I can't just like come out with my new goth look and like some pointy things and be like, oh, what, Madonna's got a new look.
Exactly.
She's doing techno.
Although you might make a good techno, I don't know. You could pull it off. I feel like it's great that you had, like, you figured out how to layer it all together. And what's interesting is that you've created these pivots and kind of surprise. Like, I'm not exactly what you thought I was along the way. And I think a lot of people in this room either are on a career path or they're building a business that's going to be, you know, here for 100 years hopefully, or it's already been here for 100 years, and they may not have the same opportunity to pivot in the same direction. I guess I wonder, like, what's your superpower at the core? Like, what kind of ties it all together? And what advice do you give to people to try to identify that, you know, that core, that single thread?
Well, look, for me, I call it the do or die mentality, right? Like, I'm not driven to prove something. I'm or contrived ambition, I'm passionately compelled. I literally like don't really know any other way, right? I'm also profoundly grounded. You know what I mean? Like there is no, I see the beauty in failure the same way I see the beauty in success, you know? And I don't, as this has evolved, it's just as shocking to me as anyone else that has known me to end up like this, obsessively learn. You know what I mean? Like, it is the only way to continue to get better and better and better is to be someone that knows that you don't know what you don't know, and you want to know what you know specifically based off.
You guys got that right. You know what you don't know and know. No.
I don't even know if that even.
No, it was great. It works. You
know, and another core value is relentlessly consistent. Right, you don't. I am not one way, one place. I'm not high and low. You don't get. You know, and why I've built trust with so many different people on so many different opportunities is because you get me at this level from the beginning to the end. You know, and I look for other do or dyers and the same mentality that I want to build businesses with. Right, the same way that sort of same individual I want to help build your life moments with. The same way. So I even went back and had to be like, what does tie it all together?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I started first with like, let's make it about a mindset or a mentality first, rather than trying to connect some sort of piece beyond that.
Along those lines, this is my last question, and you guys, we're going to bring some people up to chat with us. But you know, you joked about yoga. The music is off now, so you don't have to do anything. But is there a spiritual practice or philosophy that you, like, is your mantra? You know, is there something you do? Are you Russell Simmons and going to yoga every day?
No, it's funny. Look, somebody asked me, like, you know, and Russell Simmons specifically, like, do you meditate? You know, and I'm like, I don't meditate, but I could see myself meditating in the future. You know, now don't get me wrong. Like, I believe in process. I believe in systems, right? That ultimately allow you to free up your mind to live in the energy. You know, I guess for me, it's you wake up every day, and you either look at the world half full or half empty. Right, and on those days it's half empty, like you're literally, you could pick apart everything about your life, it doesn't matter what it is, and on the half full days, shit could be going haywire, and you're like, ah, whatever.
I'm cool, I got it.
You know, so philosophically, I don't look at any aspect of my life anymore compartmentalized. I look at it holistically as a single piece, right? And the core that I'm chasing at the top is I just want to live half full every day. Because that ultimately means you're in the energy that ultimately attracts all of the opportunity and keeps you happy and fulfilled. And I don't know if that lands specifically in some level of spirituality, but it certainly makes you feel connected to the universe as a whole, and you feel even more humbled because you are just relentlessly served blessings that you've manifested through the way that you operate, you know, and it's a humbling thing that just feels more universal, but you know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily identifies with any higher spiritual moment.
So let's bow our heads. No, I'm just kidding. I want two people to come up here. We're going to just go through some Q&A, you know, with you guys. So I'm gonna ask for volunteers, or else just drag people up here. So there we go, gentlemen in the front. Thank you.
You chase what you think is the right thing for you rather than knowing where you want to go and chasing the things that get you there, right? Random enough. But what the thing about him is, and I always tell him too, is he's got a lot of those do or die characters, right? And ultimately, he's relentlessly consistent and like and passionately compelled. He literally has no other way of working than at the level that he does, you know, and for me I wish it was like some sort of genius away of that I know how to pick amazing partners, but I just got lucky with him. You know, it's like he was fresh out of college and he had just gotten his degree and was working for writing business plans, and I was launching Street League at the time, and I needed someone to write the business plan, and I knew he was the only person that fully understood skateboarding enough to ride it and build it, and then he just did such a good job, you know, proved himself. And in just that setting of being a contractor for $2,500, that I gave him a piece of the company, and then we went and built it, you know, and then he grew into such a high level to where I eventually pulled myself out, and he now has been able to completely run the company and take it to the level it is today. I got lucky, man. Lucky.
Yeah, I've been following Brian for a long time and just trying to take notes and learn from you guys' relationship and how you built Street League, and I think that it's, you know,
what
really helped
what
me
are
out.
You doing? What contests are you doing?
So we have a contest called Shredtopia Festival that we do on the Santa Monica Pier. My company is Shredhouse Productions, and I'm familiar with Mickey Papa. It was a big moment for us as far as marketing whenever he was invited to Street League with how he did at Tampa Pro.
Yeah.
But our whole thing is like throwing skateboarding contests and also focusing on having big music acts as well, and, you know, creating a festival environment.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a really tough road, and but I was stoked
I'll
to be
tell
here.
You why it's a tough road, right? Because it's a tough business, and you're, without having a true understanding of the economic success of a business like that, because it's a single event or a couple events and the operational costs are so high, right? And now you're relying on ticket sales, and without something that's so significant, you can't get that in, or sponsors. And then without being able to offer some sort of significant reach, you're in this pool of everybody trying to get a little bit of dollars out of them. And it's an incredibly difficult model.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's your dogfight.
Yeah.
Is going to be eternal until you can look inside that business and see an opportunity to generate revenue that is not relying on sponsorship dollars. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
think
totally.
About that.
Oh, thank you.
About that.
I appreciate it.
You know, because even to tell you what we're doing with Street League, we have the world prominent biggest professional skateboarding tour on the globe, world tour, the biggest sponsors in the world. But the business is the same as yours at a larger scale, right? And even for us, like, we had to look inside the business and be like, what's so magical about it, right? It's like these elite athletes in this competition format. So we have scaled from of just doing seven massive events to launching 120 events next year that are more micro events.
With the Dam-Ams and stuff like that?
Not even Dam-Ams, like smaller, like one-on-one battles of pros, and like evolved versions of what I call micro games, right? So it's still elite athletes battling in a competition form, but at a much cheaper level, right? So we're not spending millions to do these events at big arenas, but we have a content pyramid that a battle between two pros that's $2,000 instead of an arena tour that's $2 million, but that's, we even had to pivot off that we're launching next year, because the sustainability of being an event business where you're live and die by sponsorship revenue is a lifetime dogfight. And all the guys, UFC is literally the only modern era where somebody broke out of it, and that's because they had pay-per-view, right? They had a subscription service model, you know, and all the other major, the volleyball league, anyone that came in on the lower level that was sponsorship dependent just fought the dogfight, go out of business. Somebody brings them up, fights the dogfight, goes out of business.
Yeah.
Good luck, Preston. Way to pivot.
No, I mean, that's sound advice, especially when you can identify what the hurdles are going to be. It's like you can kind of, like you said, like plan for the end result, but especially knowing what that path and what's going to be in your way. Jesse.
Cool. Thank you very much. So I'll kind of riff off that a little bit. It's probably the wrong venue for this, but I've got this philosophy that it's been tech, heavy, heavy tech for so long, and the pendulum is really come to the extreme. Now it's swinging back, it's tangible. And people are kind of craving this tactile, physical, kind of analog community, hence these type of events, summit series, you know, or what have you. And take you way back. I think Dream Factory was a while ago, yeah.
The what?
The Dream Factory. Or the
Fantasy Factory.
It strikes me as a little bit inauthentic or like false, if you will. Like a lot of the social media campaigns, like granted these strategies are imperative apparently these days, but building organic community and physical brick and mortar, providing an environment to unite like really disparate communities, skateboarders, innovators, what have you. Keeping that off the radar, keeping that, like, not utilizing these tools and building that community, how can you do that? How can you kind of arbitrage that model in this world?
I just think, you know, I think you're too much of a purist. You know what I mean? Where, like, social media is beautiful, right? Your mentality, you can actually connect with 50 of you that are spread out where you could never connect unless you create your event to where you connect with it. And that's your way of thinking is for you. It is, I can tell you right now, if you want to make it a business, there is not going to be some evolution where these micro events, what I like to call core, are going to be anything other than core events, right? Like, it, you know, I like to call it the core to more, right? If you don't have a product that the more can use, you stay real to who you are at the core. But if the more wants to use it, you can be a business, right? And I don't know if this fully answers your exact question. I don't even know if there was a question in there, other than the idea of like not connecting with the modern way of communicating. And I think, as long as you call it inauthentic, right? And there's plenty of garbage out there, just like there's garbage everywhere. But the more authentic your message is and you never waver from it on those platforms, it's just you and what you stand for with a louder microphone. You know what I mean? What is that thing called? It's a megaphone.
Bullhorn, yeah.
You know, like that's my view on it. Because what are you trying to create that you can't get?
No, I mean, we've kind of created it, but what I'm trying to, and it's experiment 100%, yeah. But I've had the honor of working with the community. I do a lot of work with the special operations community, and yeah, these guys get out and they're inherently very quiet and very humble and in a way that I haven't seen at all. And I think we as entrepreneurs stand a lot to benefit from. Yeah. And I'm not saying, and I phrase that incorrectly, I don't think social media is inauthentic. I think there's just a different way of using it. And I think there's a lot of validity. The attributes I see that have come from this community and in the disaster response world are incredibly powerful. And we kind of need that in this society. And I'm looking at the best way or exploring the best ways to kind of inject that, yeah, without necessarily taking the traditional steps.
I'll tell you what I think it is, right? At its core, there's the beauty of special operations and whatever, like there is this there's a flight or flight mentality where you actually have this depth of experience that most people don't have, right? Now, if you divide that up into pockets, into segments, whether it's military, rescue, whatever it is, and their stories, you know, kind of tie back to a single meeting, right? So you have an event to just inspire people the more by having, you know, 50 of those people speak, right? Then your online platform is always, you know, different interviews and different things with those people getting that message out, and then you use your social media to do micro bits of that to drive back to your own platform, which eventually could scale into a television show profiling these guys, scale into a television event, right? Like it has this incredible opportunity to be super authentic at its core, but still have the ability to be a real business by reaching the masses depending on how you create it. You know?
Thank you guys.
Quick question
down.
On the,
write that down.
On Brett, social media.
Quick question.
Over the past couple of days, you've seen Instagram create the story.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of a game changer.
Yeah.
As far as like Snapchat and all that stuff, where do you think? What's your position on
I wouldn't even have been able to answer this yesterday.
Yeah.
Today, I was driving in, like, look at this, like, LeBron, like, blocking Steph with, like, an Instagram face on it, and LeBron's got a Snapchat face. You know, like, I thought it was, like, Snapchat's better than Instagram, when in fact it was, my wife had to show me that, no, there's stories on here. So, look, I don't, it's a competitive world, but I'll say this. When Vine was its own platform and absolutely incredible, everybody was like, oh, there's no way, like, Instagram video is going to kill Vine, right? And it did.
Right.
And I just think, like, I don't use Snapchat, right, because it's too much hard work. Social media is really hard. It takes a lot of effort.
It does.
But it's... You can't help but naturally think a consolidation will occur over time. You know, if you could get it all in one spot, you know. But I don't know that for sure. That's just a personal opinion.
That was my opinion.
And I literally only have that knowledge today. If you'd asked me yesterday, I'd be like, "What?"
It's just been on my mind today. So I was curious.
You mean Snapchat? Yeah. So thank you guys. Two more. And good job, to you both.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Hey, man. Good luck.
Oops. How do you keep up with yourself? Like you're one of those guys that has idea of vomit, which is how I refer to it. Like, even from the invention of, you know, Fantasy World to all the stuff you just spewed out now, like business, creative, stunt. How do you keep up? And I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff on the cutting room floor that, you know, Rob Dyrdek has not gotten to.
Yeah, but it's, you know,
there's one more person.
It's just the reality of putting that to a little bit more discipline, so you don't end up doing a million different things, you know. And really, that's how you want to evolve, right? Because before, I would just have without the discipline and the structure into why I'm doing everything, I would just do everything, you know. And that's the type of energy that can be a little draining, because then some things really pull you down because you didn't think them through enough in the beginning, and it becomes a lot more work than you anticipated, you know.
Awesome. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Andrew.
Good. Hey, Andrew.
So you're talking about your new mastery goal, right? Or what you've been developing, and the goal to build 50 to 100 brands or businesses that live forever, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
You obviously can't do that alone. And you're out there, I'm sure you have a very diverse investment portfolio. What do you look for? Like, obviously, path to profitability and core values is great, but is there some kind of X factor or something that you feel more like a gut check? And maybe use an example, or maybe even talk about why one of my boys works for Beatbox Beverages. So yeah. Why you gravitated towards those guys.
Then, yeah, let me just tell you specifically, because I shat on them numerous times before
Beatbox
finally did. But I call it, in my system, I have 94 truths in my entire system. I call it the magic evaluation, right? And that's what is the intangible you can't put your finger on, right? And with something like Beatbox, this is a boxed wine that these kids made that is basically, it's a box of orange wine and fruit punch flavors, and it's 11% alcohol. It's like 44 beers in a box. It's just, you know, you grab a box and have the time of your life, right? Like, I just loved it from
Delicious.
A product standpoint, right? Now, they just didn't fully understand the business. I didn't understand the alcohol business. You know, I was sort of in this, when I was trying to really become focused, I ended up also saying that I had to stop gunslinging, right? Like, because I would just be, I'd like people and just like think like, oh, there's something special there, and like just invest in it, only they didn't have the intangibles of fully understanding holistically brand operations and finance, right? They don't have a management team that can operate, build the go-to-market, and ultimately manage the cash flow of a business to make it successful, right? I would just pick a good idea and go for it. With these guys, they were in that zone, right? And they actually were going on Shark Tank, and they said, hey, can we come pitch you before we go on Shark Tank? And I was like, oh, this is great. It's like I'm living in Shark Tank, right? So they come and pitch me, and I'm just like, you know, I just tear them apart. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, these guys aren't getting a dime, right? Like, Like, they did, like, it was like whatever, and then what? They go on Shark Tank and Cuban gives them $1 million, right? And I'm like, what the fuck? So now I'm kind of sad because it's like, shit, I could have just thrown like 50 G's in there and owned, like, you know, so I was genuinely sad.
It's the moral of the story. He was sad.
But what they had then later, after they had kind of grown a little bit and gone through a bit of trouble with Cuban and now this much bigger thing, and then they presented me this new investor round, and I'm just like, man, this is insane. This is now like Cuban trying to add value to his investment. But what they discovered, which revolutionized my sort of way of thinking, which led me to invest in multiple alcohol brands, is they actually along the way created a way to completely disrupt alcohol distribution. And that was by, instead of trying to tackle markets, you tackle neighborhoods. And their neighborhoods where, instead of trying to go into Walmart, they went into Walmart with Cuban and Shark Tank, and you got 3 weeks to get sell throw in Walmart and you're gone, right, is what happened to them. But what they discovered, which really opened up my mind into a truly magical opportunity in the alcohol space, is they go into a college town, spend $10,000 to activate, only have to sell to three or four stores in around a college, and now their $10,000 is making them $50,000. Now they have this incredible opportunity to scale that to all the college towns. They do that in 300 college towns. They have a $200 million business, right? Enterprise value, because the alcohol business is controlled by four big giants who do not care what you do. If you disrupt distribution, they just buy you on 10 times revenue, right? So now these guys have this incredible clear path to scale to be bought, right? So that is why I came back around, and I went out and built what I call a tactical revenue model for alcohol that basically, depending on what style brand you have, you go into neighborhoods and own neighborhoods instead of trying to own LA. You're like a hardcore whiskey, you try to own Venice and Hollywood, you know, rather than trying to own entire markets, right? And that's when I look at something as an opportunity, it has to be the magic, it has to be the brand, the product, it's disruptive, like there's no like boxed wine made cool. And then what's disruptive about the opportunity to actually scale it, that's clear, you know, and that's what kind of led to that opportunity. But look, that's a super sophisticated way to look at shit, you know. You know, and now I try to take and apply my brand philosophy to be, tell them, like, hey, your brand story isn't about your boxed wine. It's about what this box means to those I was going to say kids. When those young
these
men
tweens.
And those millennials get that box represents we're about to have the time of our lives, right? It's like, rather than making it be about, oh, this box is a great tasting alcohol beverage, it has to be like that box represents that, and that soul then scales into how they talk in social, how they talk in media. Now that's their how they talk when they get to each town to activate, and this box should be representative of this portion of their lives, of these millennials' lives that are in college, where they were carefree and just wanted to have fun and study a little bit, or whatever they do in college. And that's more the opportunity that I saw holistically, you know what I mean? But look, I look at everything, but I try to look for the intangible, and the intangible, what I like to call magic, kind of happens when there's an energy that comes from all the pieces coming together, you know.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Look, I know that was a little over the top.
Anybody else?
Getting a little technical.
The young lady, please come up. Yes, you.
Or you can just yell it from there. Like, I don't want to judge.
Doing it for the cameras.
Okay.
I just made that up. I don't know if there's cameras in here. Leadership-wise, like, what type of leader are you? Like, you know, when you're managing a team and, you know, or like a portfolio of companies, like, what is your personal approach to being a leader?
I had to learn and evolve it in a major way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm I don't like to operate. You know, I don't even like a core. I like to have just a core unit of people. Then I like to drop in and talk about them operating. I don't like to be in the day-to-day of trying to manage teams and people. I have a very small team, and then I try to go and build companies with A-plus operators and brand people that can actually build a business, you know. And then I like to just be there as my ability. I have a really good ability to see big, like, holistic vision, and then the micro details that need to add up to it.
Right. You know,
I just try to feed what I see to great people that can execute. You know?
That's brilliant. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Hey. Nice to meet you. Thank you. And I'm a fellow entrepreneur. Well, I wouldn't say fellow. I don't put myself in that category at all, but I am an entrepreneur. And my question is kind of along the lines of what you were just talking about in terms of building a team and having trust in people to represent you and your brands. So what do you look for in your team, you know, in terms of, you know, personality traits and actual skills and qualifications?
Yeah, look, I call it the do or die mentality. You know, like I keep saying it over and over, and why it is so important, you know, and that, like, the profoundly grounded thing is, like, are you just a good person? You know what I mean? Like, we call it, are you energetically driven, right? Do you actually find energy by managing energy and find drive? Are you passionately compelled? Would you do it? You're doing it because you don't know any other way. You're not trying to do something. You're doing it because this is you. And then ultimately, the number one trait is relentlessly consistent, because you build trust in everyone, right? And it's the beauty of having that level of depth in the values. You know, even in the small team, when you're what you find a lot, when especially people working for me, is, man, you're so excited in those first 3 months. You're killing it, right? You're like, I'm here before anyone, I'm da da da, and then you slowly fade. And that's not relentlessly consistent, right? That's literally contrived ambition, where you, like, faked it till you made it, and then the real you came out. And it doesn't last long in an environment when you've really established, like, no, we have trust in each other because we all know how hard we work. Everyone in here is just the same with these values, you know? And that's, I would implore to anybody, especially when you're starting a company, the more you can establish what are all of you, and everybody have those traits, all the way down to the legal team, to the way that you I try to hire do or die legal teams, accounting team. Like, I want my same mentality. I want the accounting version of me. I want the legal version of me, you know, like, not like the lazy, like, you know, which I've had for years. This is an evolution. You know, I'm an adult man who's lost a lot of money and learning this, you know what I mean?
Have you identified those traits? Because you mentioned, like, this 3 month, you know, sort of period of time where performance falls off, or you kind of learn who that individual is after you've already engaged with them. Have you learned to identify some of those either great traits or not so great traits, like, up front, like thin slicing, like Malcolm Gladwell refers to it?
Look, I only when I've defined it more, you know, it's very easy. And look, it doesn't always work. Like, I will, like, you know, there'll be times where, like, they are just rally crying everything, and you connect with them on just theory and life and vision, and it just doesn't happen. You know, I think it's just the interview process is so incredibly difficult. You're on a train going 1,000 miles an hour, and you need help somewhere. So even your lens that you're willing to dedicate, you know, how militant you want to be on those traits in itself, you got to take a leap of faith. And sometimes people blow your mind and are 10 times better than you thought, and sometimes they literally, you think they're going to be rock stars, and they just dud out. It just is what it is, you know. Very hard to fire people too, you know what I mean?
So do you think, I mean, obviously nobody's ever going to share your passion at your level, right? And so how do you think within, like, the core mission of your organizations that you just drive that passion with, you know, the same energy that you just shared?
Oh man, I find people like me everywhere. You know, like, I don't, like, there's me's in everything I do, and it's fun. You know, and that sort of, like, why I go back to, I'm trying to start first with everything I do with that mentality. Are you a do or die or like me? And when you are, it's real, recognize real, it's peas in a pod, time of your life, this is gonna be incredible. Let's build a plan backwards, oh, this is gonna be amazing. And then when it's, when shit gets real, right, because it always does, you don't just collapse, you figure it out together just the same, you know what I mean? And have faith and trust and each other based off of the plan that you guys built together. You know, I think that is, it is one of the most overlooked things. And I just think any person in entrepreneurialism should read Think and Grow Rich over and over, because it fundamentally lays out the type of person that you need to be to put together all of the pieces that allow you to create a mastermind alliance, to have a plan, to keep that that pursuit of what you're trying to achieve. But more than anything, all of those pieces create faith when shit hits the fan, as it always will, you know what I mean? And that's where you, what you have to develop over time to have faith in yourself, the plan and the team that you created, you know. Easier said than done, I know. Look, easier said than done.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Anyone else? How are we doing on time? Are we good? I can't see your fingers, but I trust you. Young man, yes, are you with your hand up? Come on up.
Yeah,
yell it.
Man, yell it.
Two questions. One, first, I'm a serial entrepreneur and I'm an entrepreneur as well. And so my question is, how do you know when you've bitten off more than you can chew? Like, you know, that everything's on top of you and you know you're not doing everything that you can to kind of make all of your businesses thrive.
Yeah. It's happened. It is a part of it, you know. And what I learned along the way is why does this keep happening to me, right? It wasn't like it sort of happened. It would be all the time. And then the problem is like, you know, I'm doing so many things, right? That you also are afforded when a couple things are going wrong in one, you got all the energy of the other ones, but God forbid it balances down where there's a bunch of things going on. It feels like nothing's possible, you know? And that's why I literally stopped and created my entire system of what I need foundationally before I ever do a business again. And those sort of core principles, and I just put them all out on my website, right? Because I feel like in the future, anyone that I want to partner with, they need to look at that website and be like, okay, God, if we do all this, like we're gonna have something here, or recognize it and be like, this is what we need to do. But I just, it fundamentally comes down to the type of people that you have built companies with. And then you as an entrepreneur, foundationally understanding that entire plan, right? It's why I went from looking at revenue models to wanting to see tactical revenue models that create a micro path to success that puts everybody in the company like dollar for dollar, door for door, person for person, how you're actually going to scale. And every single person, when do you want to sell this? If you don't want to sell it, what do you want it for? Okay, you want it to get it to profitability and it be what you do for the rest of your life? Cool, I'm only in it for the next 5 years, so when we get it to here, I'm selling my equity, right? It's that at least, you know, in Think and Grow Rich and the book Start at the End, right? Like, you have to decide, I want to make $20 million. I want to make 500 grand a year for the rest of my life. You have to decide what that is and build your plan backwards from that. And that's how you relieve when you're just getting overwhelmed, because a lot of times so much unexpected stuff doesn't happen. And then you're like, we got to get this person to handle this. It's which a lot of it could have been avoided because with a better plan at the very beginning. Easier said than done. If you want to chase it down, the beauty of it is you get better and better the older you get and smarter as you keep looking and doing so many different businesses. Because I didn't talk like this like 5 years ago. And JJ knows it. JJ's like, who is this guy, man?
The second question is, I know you have a love for animals, right? I'm involved with an animal charity. Great idea. I've actually already done one with Lance Bass, but this wonderful kind of event partnered with a charity. I was wondering if you'd be interested.
Listen to me. I love animals, okay? I've had a small horse. I've attempted to own a pig before. I have a snake. I have a rabbit. I have two bulldogs. And literally, like, if heaven cried a tear and dropped this little mini Pomeranian on me, that's what it is. But I don't really do charity work outside of my existing world. It's inauthentic to me, you know, so it's and for the total balance of my life as a whole, I like spending time with my wife who's about to have our first child, and I've already
there they are.
You know, and I've already, you know, I didn't build this plan and this way of thinking without taking all of that into consideration, you know, and part of that really is managing your time and being incredibly efficient at saying no. You know what I mean? So I appreciate it, but
yeah, for sure. Thank you.
I think we only have a couple more minutes, and people, it's almost lunchtime too. I just wanted to kind of end on one note. First of all, you mentioned you go to your website to get some information. What is the URL to the
DeerDeckMachine.com?
DeerDeckMachine.com.
It's too technical. Everybody. It'll melt your brain.
Brain melting. That's the note I wanted to end on. I mean, Worlds is very inspirational. Like, you hear the speakers doing the keynotes, and like, you're thinking about how good life is. The glass is half full. I'm just curious as to what inspired you at 10, 11, and you know, as you just mentioned, you've kind of grown older and wiser. What inspires you now? Like, what are the, you know, what's changed about the things or the you know, the internal mechanism that breeds inspiration for you?
I don't think anything's changed. I've just learned to understand what it is, right? And I really lay this on any and everyone. If you can look at holistically, if you can look at your whole life and be like, this is what I want out of life, and build backwards from there, it as you begin to achieve that, and God forbid you get to a place where you really achieve it, your fulfillment and your ability to get up energized and live in that energy compounds on itself, right? So it's you get to a point where you can't. I get up every day and I can't believe what a lucky life that I have, or how happy that I truly at my soul am. And that just is this sort of perpetual energy that you don't even look at anymore, because it's simply the way that you live.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, sick.
Thank you, guys. Group hug? Or at least some applause. I appreciate it. I don't know if you're going to be sticking around, but thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks
a lot. I got to get to work, man. All these ideas ain't going to run themselves.